Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, NHK Japan, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The change in the U.S. presidency was met with relief and hope by most world leaders, especially in Europe. But undoing the setbacks in global relations will take a lot of effort, and not everyone wants the U.S. to sit at the head of the table. Many consider it too broken. Despite directives from the Biden team, the European Union has moved forward in extending economic ties with China, the only major economy that did not shrink in 2020. The Iranian president called on Biden to return to the 2015 nuclear agreement and drop the crippling sanctions imposed under Trump. The daily death toll in the UK continues to worsen. A new caravan of migrants from Honduras has been stopped and the people beaten by Guatemalan soldiers. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
As Joe Biden is the 46th president now of the United States of America, the world is watching to see what kind of a country he will lead back onto the world stage. Well, 4 years of Trump's America First turned the idea of U.S. leadership on its head. His replacement's first task will be to rebuild and reshape some crucial relationships.
Chaos in Washington, a pandemic out of control. An economy on the brink,
they do not get
a nation profoundly divided. The U.S. has enough crises going on at home to take up the energy of any new president, but the rest of the world looks every bit as daunting. China is now a rival superpower. Russia is openly hostile. And climate change threatens everything. Unveiling his foreign policy team, Joe Biden said he would tackle all these challenges by rejecting Trump's slogan of America First and reviving American leadership at the head of the Western alliance.
America is back, ready to lead the world, not retreat from it, once again sit at the head of the table, ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies.
This new spirit from Biden is being warmly welcomed here in Berlin and in other capitals around Europe. And yet on this crucial issue of China, the Europeans have started doing their own thing. The EU has just agreed a sweeping investment treaty with Beijing, ignoring requests from the Biden team to wait and work together. Angela Merkel herself was the driver of the deal, which will be a moneymaker for German companies. It's not a great omen for Biden's plan to hold a summit of democracies. He wants free societies to line up together to challenge China, seeing it as a growing threat to democracy everywhere. He'll want Europe fully on board.
European leaders do often condemn China over human rights abuses, but that rarely turns into action. And many are wary of being sucked into a long-term conflict between the US and Beijing.
But any European hedging on this could expose the underlying tensions in the transatlantic relationship, which burst into the open under Donald Trump.
If Europeans believe that they can remain neutral in a growing rivalry between the United States and China and sort of have equally good relations with Beijing and Washington, and at the same time expect the United States to be the first responder whenever anything happens in Europe, I think they're living in a dream world, that's not going to be possible.
This was the heart of the crisis between the US and Europe during the Trump years. Trump scorned European allies as freeloaders, and that has shaken trust, perhaps even permanently, because one day, Trump, or someone like him, could be back.
Now, if Europeans look at the transatlantic alliance, there is a stronger degree of caution than there was before the Trump years, that Europeans need to build up their own resources and their own strategies to be able to act in a more independent way.
The death throes of the Trump administration have added to fears that the US has become fundamentally unstable, a power that allies can never again depend on in quite the same way. Ultimately, that means that Biden's success or failure at home will profoundly affect what he can achieve abroad. He says America's back, but the rest of the world is asking, is it too broken to lead?
Richard Walker there, reporting.
China's economy beat expectations in 2020, growing by 2.3%. It was boosted by a strong fourth quarter. This makes it the only major economy to avoid shrinking last year as countries struggle with the impact of COVID-19. Beijing's tough measures to contain the virus are thought to be one reason behind the growth.
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has called on U.S. President Joe Biden to return to the 2015 nuclear agreement and to lift sanctions against Iran. Rouhani says his country promises to fulfill its commitments under the deal if the United States does so as well. Rouhani was quoted saying that, quote, the ball is now in the court of the U.S.
UK hospitals are under growing pressure as coronavirus deaths rise to record levels. More than 1,800 people died on Tuesday. An extremely contagious variant is spreading nationwide. Some cathedrals have been converted into mass vaccination centers.
Mexico's President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador has urged the incoming U.S. administration under Joe Biden to make major reforms to its immigration policy. His appeal comes as a new caravan of migrants from Honduras attempts to make its way through Guatemala. But Guatemala's foreign minister has said allowing them to cross through his country and reach a potentially closed border with Mexico would create a humanitarian crisis. And he's asking Honduras to help organize for their return.
What started as a deterrent soon turned into a real use of force. On Monday, Guatemalan security forces dispersed thousands of Honduran migrants. They're stranded in the department of Chiquimula, but want to continue their journey towards the United States. It's the third time in recent days that soldiers have clashed with the caravan of migrants, which includes women and children. Guatemala's government accuses the caravan of being infiltrated by criminal gangs, and says most of the migrants did not have the negative coronavirus tests required to enter the country. Now they're being sent back to Honduras, even though they insist there is no home for them to return to. The clashes with Guatemalan troops have sparked new tensions between the two Central American neighbours. Honduras's Human Rights Commissioner urged Guatemala to treat the migrants on their soil with respect. Now all eyes are on Mexico and how the government there will react if the caravan manages to cross Guatemala and reach its border. The migrants are not expected to give up their mission. After all, it is the incoming US administration that is fueling their hopes. Joe Biden, who's due to take office on Wednesday, promised during his campaign to reform the strict migration policies imposed by his predecessor, Donald Trump.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. The British government and the European Union have called for a halt to new illegal Israeli settler expansions into the Palestinian West Bank. Before Trump left office, he called for the Central Command to coordinate military activities with Israel, replacing the European Union, and designated Bahrain and United Arab Emirates as major security partners. Trump also imposed more sanctions for countries and companies for doing business with Iran. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The British government has expressed serious concern about Israeli plans to expand settlements in the occupied West Bank, calling for an immediate halt to the illegal construction as the move could threaten future peace negotiations. The anti-settlement monitoring group, Peace Now, announced on Sunday that Israeli authorities advanced plans for the construction of 780 new illegal settler units in the occupied West Bank. The announcement came a week after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered plans for the construction of new homes in the area. Quote, the UK is seriously concerned by Israel's decision to approve the construction of 780 new settlement units across the occupied Palestinian territories, a Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office spokesperson said. The inclusion of areas deep in the West Bank and within the construction plans could threaten future peace negotiations, the spokesperson said. Settlements are illegal under international law and risk undermining the physical viability of the two-state solution. We call for the construction of these in East Jerusalem and elsewhere in the West Bank to cease immediately, the spokesperson said. The UK and much of the international community have criticised ongoing construction of illegal settlements in areas that belong to Palestinians. The European Union urged Israel in a statement earlier this week to halt its settlement expansion in the occupied West Bank. Outgoing US President Donald Trump has ordered the country's Central Command, CENTCOM, to coordinate military activities with Israel, while also designating Persian Gulf Arab Kingdoms of Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates as, quote, major security partners in his dying days in office. The move, first reported by the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, follows a last-minute push by Trump to shore up a regional anti-Iran alliance and convince Arab leaders in West Asia to normalize ties with Tel Aviv, as Washington intends to focus more on countering major military and economic rival China in the coming years. The occupied Palestine had previously fallen under the area of responsibility of the US European Command out of diplomatic deference to the political sensitivities of US-sponsored Arab regimes, many of which have long refused to publicly recognize the Tel Aviv regime. The oil-rich Persian Gulf kingdoms of the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain have signed formal agreements recognizing the Israeli regime under the so-called Abraham Accords, while the rest of North African states of Sudan and Morocco have so far signaled openness to doing so under intense U.S. pressure. The Trump administration has offered significant incentives for the agreements, including debt relief for Sudan and advanced weapon sales to the despotic rulers of the UAE and Morocco. The bid to include the Israeli-occupied Palestine in CENTCOM's region was not a last-minute decision and has been frequently discussed by senior U.S. military officials in recent years. The outgoing administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has imposed more sanctions on companies in Iran, China, and the United Arab Emirates for doing business with the Islamic Republic of Iran shipping lines and on three Iranian entities over conventional arms proliferation. In the dying days of the Trump administration, and an apparent attempt to make life difficult for Joe Biden, the U.S. State Department announced over the weekend that Washington had sanctioned seven companies, including Chinese-based Jiangyin Mascot Special Steel and UAE-based Accenture Building Materials, and two people for shipping steel to or from Iran. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in a statement, Iran's Marine Industries Organization, Aerospace Industries Organization, and the Iran Aviation Industries Organization had also been blacklisted over conventional arms proliferation. The statement claimed that these entities have manufactured military equipment for Iran's military to what he called, quote, perpetuate its global terror campaign.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. On to NHK World Radio Japan. The new U.S. Secretary of State Blinken and Secretary of Defense Austin believe that China poses a strong challenge and will need a strong hand. The World Health Organization is urging all countries to distribute COVID vaccines more fairly. A United Nations treaty banning nuclear weapons takes effect Friday, though countries possessing nuclear weapons like the U.S. have not signed the treaty. NHK Japan.
Amid final preparations for Inauguration Day, five of Biden's cabinet nominees appeared at Senate confirmation hearings. His pick for Secretary of State emphasized a shift away from Trump's America First style of diplomacy. But Antony Blinken did agree that China poses a significant challenge and will need a strong hand.
I also believe that President Trump was right in taking a tougher approach to China. I disagree very much with the way that he went about it in a number of areas, but the basic principle was the right one, and I think that's actually helpful to our foreign policy.
Biden's defense nominee echoed these feelings, saying Asia, and specifically China, remains a focus of military strategy.
Globally, I understand that Asia must be the focus of our effort, and I see China in particular as a pacing challenge for the department.
Austin also pointed to the need to strengthen alliances, naming Japan, South Korea, and Australia. He says this region is at the top of destinations he hopes to visit.
As countries around the world roll out their own programs, the World Health Organization is urging everyone to distribute life-saving vaccines more fairly.
It's right that all governments want to prioritize vaccinating their own health workers and older people first. But it's not right that younger, healthier adults in rich countries are vaccinated before health workers and older people in poorer countries.
Tedros says wealthy nations have now administered more than 39 million doses, while one of the world's poorest has received just 25. He wants all countries to be ready to vaccinate in April. The WHO created an international distribution program, but Tedros says more profitable bilateral deals are putting global efforts at serious risk. He says a catastrophic moral failure could be coming, with the world's poor paying the price with their lives.
A United Nations treaty banning nuclear weapons takes effect on Friday. Survivors of the 1945 U.S. atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki have urged the Japanese government to join the treaty, which has not been signed by the nuclear powers or countries under the U.S. nuclear umbrella like Japan. Survivors known as Hibakusha said Japan should take the lead in seeking the abolition of nuclear weapons. Kodama Michiko experienced the atomic bombing of Hiroshima when she was 7.
I'm very pleased to tell the many victims the nuclear weapons, which took so many souls, have been banned under international law.
Kodama said that the government should lead global efforts to eliminate nuclear arms and must join the treaty as soon as possible. Wada Masako, another assistant secretary general of the group, is a survivor of the Nagasaki atomic bombing. Wada urged U.S. President Joe Biden to think about how inhumane and destructive nuclear weapons are. She expressed hope that Biden will work for peace not only for the U.S., but for the world. A key Japanese member of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICAN, Kawasaki Akira, said that the treaty will be a driving force in reducing nuclear arms.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. We will conclude with Russia's Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi spoke with Ben Cohen of Ice Cream fame. Cohen explained why it is important to prosecute Trump for crimes, or else it is saying presidents are above the law. He then explains the campaign to overturn the qualified immunity law. He also talks about his meeting with Julian Assange and the importance of his case. Sputnik Radio.
Joining me now is someone who campaigned for a Democrat nominee that was narrowly beaten by Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders. His name is Ben Cohen. He's a co-founder of the famous ice cream company, Ben and Jerry's. And he's an activist as well as a businessman.
I think it's incredibly important to prosecute and convict Trump of some crime, because if we don't, we're essentially saying, yeah, the president is above the law. And, you know, what I always heard was that what we're really proud of in the U.S. is that we're a nation of laws, and Trump has incited to riot. I mean, if I did what Trump did, I'd be in jail.
But you know that presidents are usually above the law. Can you name one U.S. president in your lifetime that hasn't been above the law?
There has been nothing comparable to Trump.
I mean, the point is that surely you were backing something called the Qualified Immunity Bill way before Donald Trump. So you knew that there were presidents, and you know, you don't need to go back that far. You don't need to go back to Nixon. You can go to the death squads under Ronald Reagan in Latin America, can't you? You can go to President Obama destroying Africa's richest per capita country, Libya, in the Libya war, let alone your President George W. Bush in Iraq. Tell me about the qualified immunity bill.
Well, qualified immunity is a judicial doctrine that was created by the Supreme Court. It's interesting that it's actually an interpretation of a law that came to be known as the Ku Klux Klan Act. It was passed in the late 1800s. And the situation that was going on at the time was that many police officers were members of the Ku Klux Klan. And so they were abusing black people. And Congress specifically passed this law to allow people to sue the police if their civil rights or constitutional rights were violated. So we had this law, and then the Supreme Court essentially eviscerated it and came up with this doctrine that they call qualified immunity. And what qualified immunity says is that it doesn't matter whether a police officer has violated the law. The only thing that matters is, has another police officer been convicted of acting in a similar situation? If there has been no other police officer convicted of brutalizing in that exact way, then the police officer gets off. And that is unjust. That's why we have the police brutalizing, going so far as murdering unarmed black people, and they get off scot-free. It's a matter of justice. I mean, it's the same thing about being above the law. The police who are charged with enforcing the law should not be above the law. And, you know, the police are the one element of society that we as citizens give the right to use lethal force in our name. And they need to be held accountable if they abuse that power. Qualified immunity keeps them from being held accountable. Kamala Harris is in favor of overturning qualified immunity. The most conservative member of the Supreme Court and the most liberal member of the Supreme Court are both in favor of overturning qualified immunity. It's kind of a strange sounding term, qualified immunity. It sounds very esoteric, but amazingly enough, people in the United States are understanding it. And 2/3 of the American public wants to see police held more accountable for their actions.
So to be plain, you are quite optimistic. There's a level of optimism there that the new Biden administration may do what you've been campaigning for so long?
Yeah. I mean, especially because Biden was part of, well, worked hard to pass that law that resulted in mass incarceration of Black people. I think that he needs to do something to make up for that mistake. And I believe, my understanding is that he believes it was a mistake.
You actually met Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy. Tell me what you think of him.
I was incredibly impressed with him in terms of how much of a caring and compassionate person he is. He honestly believed that if he could just expose the truth of what was going on, expose the laws that are being broken, expose ethical, moral, you know, lapses, both government and the people would force a change, would force the government to change their ways. And I think that he was very saddened to realize that that's not enough. It's not enough just to expose the truth of what's going on, to expose the war crimes that are being done in our name and with our money, killing unarmed civilians and enjoying it is a horrible thing. And the problem is that the people who did that should be in that cell that Assange is in now. And instead, it's the typical response of killing the messenger. The government doesn't want the people to know what's being done in their name and with their money. And so if some guy exposes it, they don't want to solve the problem. They want to kill the messenger. They see the problem as being that somebody revealed what the government is actually doing.
Ben Cohen, thank you.
That interview was by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.